Hey guys. Welcome to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Thanks for tuning in. Hope everybody had a good weekend. I did. All right, good. All right, well, hell. All my dang guests. They were all a bunch of no-shows. Well, actually, only one's a no-show, and the others I just ain't heard back from, or I heard no's from. That's all right. I've got more than enough news to try to cover for you here. And probably, some sermonizing, too. And actually, now that I think about it, we could even do some phone calls, man. Especially if chat room folks seem like they're interested in doing phone calls. You guys let me know. If you want to join up the chat room, that's scotthorton.org/chat. scotthorton.org/chat to join up the chat room. It's a IRC Freenode chat. But you don't need any kind of special thing. You can just use your browser and just go right to it there. Today's show, I guess just me doing the news. 12 to 2. All right. Plenty of bad news to talk about. No problem there. And you know how it is with the show, man. Probably someone will show up in the email at some point. Actually, you know what? I don't know how many live invites I have out right now. Maybe Patrick Coburn is the only one I'm waiting to hear back from right now. Oh, no. Center for Constitutional Rights. Waiting to hear back from them as well. And then I think there was one more. Got a lot of no's. And one big cancellation. But anyway, that's how it goes with live radio on a deadline. Sometimes things don't work out. Time zone difficulties. Bacterial infections. Anyway. So, yeah, it's my show. It's the Scott Horton Show. And you're welcome, Mirko. Mirko in the chat room says, hey, thanks for attacking Senator Warren. On the Twitter there, because someone was trying to say something nice about her, and I was trying to point out how, no, actually, she's horrible. And then someone pointed out to me that actually she voted against the Iron Dome thing, I think it was. No, she was bad on the Iron Dome. What was it? She voted well on one thing one time in regards to the Palestinians. I forgot what it was, but... It was funny, the person on Twitter used the symbol, which I was unfamiliar with. I had to Google it, and it was the symbol for a nanometer or a micro. Oh, it was a microgram. Here's a microgram worth of difference between her and Hillary Clinton. That sounds probably about right. Boy, there's a bunch more I need to read at the break because I can't read tweets and talk at the same damn time. Okay. France targeted versus mass surveillance. Yeah, so everybody says, I'm looking at my notes, thinking about one thing, mouthing what I'm reading at the other side of my brain. Oh, from the first day. They came out saying, oh, well, this just proves the need for the National Security Agency to sweep up everything. Well, it does, because I don't remember the National Security Agency providing a timely tip to the French police so that they could thwart this attack. Do you guys remember this happening that way? The NSA intercepted a phone call, prioritized it, figured out what it meant, and passed it on to the French, who then saved the day. Is that the story? No, it's not. Okay. I get it. I guess Hayden's point was, if only they had been able to completely and totally data mine every American's email and all our audio of all our phone calls and every other thing without limit, then they would have been able to thwart this attack in France by Frenchmen who apparently had traveled to Syria and Yemen. Huh? That's funny. I guess being Michael Hayden and having September 11th happen on your watch and then tapping every American's phone in direct violation of the FISA statute, millions and millions of felony counts, and also helping to oversee the rendition and torture program means that your arguments don't have to make sense, because if you're Michael Hayden sitting on your piles of millions of contractor dollars, nothing succeeds like failure. And he's never had to face accountability even for a minute. The closest thing he ever got to accountability was having to stand there while Glenn Greenwald reminded everyone that September 11th happened on his watch. But that was it. Michael Hayden will never be held to account even for saying things that don't make any sense at all. And so, you know, when you have no check and balance on you like that, I guess you just kind of make up stuff. And it's the same thing all over the place. Oh, we have to have mass surveillance. Yeah, but they had targeted surveillance of these two voted most likely to someday commit a so-called lone wolf attack. These two who had been known to French police and American police, for that matter, for a decade. Oh, 9.5 years. They participated in a network sending young men off to fight in Iraq 10 years ago for the Sunni-based insurgency in Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And they had recently gone to Yemen, or one of them at least had recently gone to Yemen and to Syria, they say. He was on the American no-fly list. He can't get to America from Europe because they won't let him on a plane. That was the same with both of these guys. And, hell, I was reading a thing where they're quoting all different journalists and even the local sociologist from down at State College or whatever in France, who said, yeah, you know, I'd studied these guys and talked with them and whatever. They were the most known quantity wannabe jihadist types in all of France, this guy and his brother. And they called off the targeted surveillance. I heard these French pigs on National Public Radio. You got to tune in and listen to your enemy. I was listening to these French pigs on National Public Radio saying, well, it takes like 10 cops to follow someone. Yeah, but you need to be able to follow everyone who is not suspected of anything at all, who's never mind been actually convicted of participating in crimes with a syndicate working to send guys to fight in Iraq. This guy also, he was busted, but they ended up dropping the charges. They said they couldn't prove it good enough in court, but that, yeah, he was busted as part of a plot to break another jihadi out of prison. They called off the targeted surveillance, but they need to be able to read what you say to your significant other, what you write to your business associates. That has to be their business. But what the most likely to do something horrible, wannabe jihadists, actual ones in practice, I guess, in France. When it comes to them, you know, they just don't have the manpower. I don't know. I don't understand. People say, why do you hate the government so much? And I say, why don't you? I just don't understand it. Anyway, more ranting and complaining. And possible news coverage, and maybe even an interview or two, coming up here in a few. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders, quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. and, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Cool, man. So some lady wrote a big thing about flashbang grenades. Julia Anguin. And it's at ProPublica. Hotter than lava, it's called. And very, very interesting. So I said, hey, did you ever see that clip in Waco, The Rules of Engagement, where Bob Barr gets into it with Jim Cavanaugh about them? And Charles Schumer, the lowest scumbag in all of North America, is saying, oh, well, flashbang grenade isn't a grenade. It's just a little poppy pop thing. It doesn't do anything. And Bob Barr calls, Bob Barr, he calls over the house page and he hands him a ball of Play-Doh. And he says, young man, would you please bring that over to the witness there? And so he has Jim Cavanaugh, the head of the ATF, holding a ball of Play-Doh. And he says, now, Mr. Cavanaugh, if that was a flashbang grenade whose pin had been pulled, would you feel comfortable holding that in your hand right now?
Geez, no, I guess since I'm under oath, yeah, no, I would not.
Yeah, because it would blow your face off, right? And it's classified as a lethal device under U.S. Code 182.35678.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true, too, yeah.
Yeah, flashbang grenade. It is quite likely that's how the Waco fire started, was with flashbang grenades. It's possible also that it was with the incendiary, or I should say pyrotechnic, not incendiary, pyrotechnic CS delivery rounds and or the flashbang grenades started the fire there. Anyway, yeah, it's a great clip. Where, you know, in fact, didn't we talk about this on the show a few weeks back where, they were saying in court, in some, court trial, oh, it's no big deal. Oh, okay. Then I guess it's okay if we set one off in the jury box. And then that way you can demonstrate to the jury what not a big deal a flashbang grenade is. Are you down with that, Mr. Prosecutor? You want to do that? Said one good defense attorney in America. And the prosecutor said, no. No, I would not like to set off a flashbang grenade in the jury box because then they might want to all throw them at me. And maybe even let the accused go free. Yeah, a flashbang grenade is only a weapon if someone ever uses one against a government employee. Then it's a weapon. Then it's a weapon of mass destruction. But they can throw one at your child's face and it's your fault. Ask little Bobo down there in Georgia from just a couple of months back. I had a hole blown right through his chest and punctured his lung and blew most of his nose and lips off. He's got millions of dollars worth of plastic surgery bills coming, and the county and the state and whatever jurisdiction are telling the family, go screw you. And, of course, the guy they were looking for wasn't even there. They hadn't even done the most minimal surveillance on the house that they were raiding at 4 o'clock in the morning. Little wannabe pretend Navy SEALs, pretend Delta Force, lowly scumbag illiterate sheriff's deputy nobodies, pretending like they're real heroes killing real bad guys over there in Afghanistan where the real Navy SEALs and real Delta Force murder innocent people in their night raids every night. And in this case, in their pretending, they threw a flashbang grenade right into the crib of a 3-year-old little toddler. But anyway, don't worry. They're the government. They have the right to do anything they want to anyone. If they had deliberately thrown the flashbang grenades at the little boy over and over and over again until it killed them, they still would all get away with it. And you know it. There's no accountability for these guys. There is no accountability. That's what pisses me off about I Can't Breathe. Like, okay, yeah, man, Eric Garner is a victim. But, okay, so what are we doing about it? How about hashtag accountability for killer cops? Isn't that the issue? Accountability? Maybe it's not. Maybe the cops invented the hashtag I Can't Breathe just to make sure that the hashtag wouldn't be accountability for killer cops. But anyway. And so here's the thing too, man, is I just, I guess I could try to cue it up on air here. What the hell, man? As long as I'm wasting this whole segment on it. I'm trying to find the part. Oh, this would be toward the end, right? Here's Janet Reno saying it was just a pretty good rental. The tank was just a good rental car. The tank was just a good rental car. I don't know what's the big deal.
Get that proof in their hands. And yet the very next morning, they launched the gas and tank attack.
Supplies a number of irritants to the nostrils, to the eyes, to the skin. Just touching to the skin can be extremely painful. You can have certain symptoms of nausea. You can have certain symptoms of inflammation with regard to membranes. So it is extremely uncomfortable.
Boot camp trainees are briefly exposed to a mild amount of CS for a few seconds. The Davidians received more than 10 times that dosage for more than 6 hours. CS isn't a gas, it's a chemical powder. At Waco, the CS powder was dissolved in methylene chloride, a volatile chemical used for stripping paint. Together, they formed an aerosol mist when sprayed through huge steel injectors fitted onto the tanks. In closed spaces, CS alone can cause unconsciousness, death, and can be ignited by a spark into a fireball. When CS burns, it produces hydrogen cyanide. The same.
I saw a grenade in a cop's hand, but now it's just him loading bullets into a magazine, preparing to murder a bunch of women and children. Otherwise, I would have let that play where it was. The Bob Barr part. Well, if anybody knows the Bob Barr part in the Rules of Engagement, the Play-Doh scene, if anyone can tell me the time to cue that up, I sure would appreciate it. I'm looking at it on YouTube here. If you go to my Twitter feed, you can find the link to the one that I'm using. That's twitter.com/ScottHortonShow. Or tell me in the chat room, too, if you get a chance. All right, sorry. We'll be right back with current events in just a sec here. You should watch this movie, Waco, The Rules of Engagement, if you haven't seen it. It's on YouTube, the whole thing. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Rad, I found it.
About these things knows they can't.
Mr. Kavanaugh, I have in my hand here a amount of Play-Doh.
Wait, let's get all the Schumer in there. Mr.
Bush,
I had all the Schumer.
Bringing out a live grenade, so I left them there. There were a number of grenades.
Okay, Mr. DeGaron, I think that would hamper your credibility because you're the first person who would say that those were grenades. I've never really sat through a hearing the likes of yesterday. 6.5 hours of defense lawyers, their marathons, their ways of sliding over the truth was very unfortunate. This idea of the FBI having hand grenades, not flashbangs, but hand grenades. And finally, coup de grace, Mr. DeGaron said flashbangers can kill, injure, maim. Anyone who knows anything about these things knows they can't.
Mr. Kavanaugh, I have in my hand here a amount of Play-Doh. Mr. Bush, if you could This is just standard Play-Doh. If that were a flashbang grenade or a stun grenade, the same thing, which was live, which pin had been pulled, would you feel comfortable just holding that in your hand?
Well, Mr. Barr, a flashbang grenade, my answer is no. I would not want to hold it.
Those are classified as destructive devices under 26 U.S.C. Section 5845F, aren't they?
Yes, sir, they are.
That they can kill people. Is that true?
Certainly, yes, sir.
Well, a gentleman by the name of Warren L. Parker, an explosives enforcement officer, Bureau of ATF, on May 11, 1994, in court, said under oath that they are designed to help kill the suspect while not endangering the law enforcement officer when they're used for those purposes.
I'd like to focus on the search warrant. First, it was put together as a number of witnesses have testified.
So there you go. Bob Barr handing Jim Kavanaugh of the ATF his ass. And it says right here in the instructions, they're designed to kill people. Isn't that correct? Certainly. Yes. Now that you have me under oath, and you know what's funny there, and you can't see this part on the radio, is that scumbag Schumer sinking in his chair. Oh, come on, don't pretend like you've got the slightest bit of shame, you scumbag. Anyway, you want to know why America is a lawless, totalitarian police state right now? It's because when they murdered the Branch Davidians, all your moms and dads said, "Yay, good, kill them! Yay, we love cops and we hate people! We love cops and we hate freedom of religion! We love cops and we hate the right to bear arms! We love cops and we'll believe anything that they say about their neighbors!" In the midst of an obvious design to come up with excuses to murder them. The American people in super majorities said, go find more Branch Davidians and murder them too. And then after a couple years, people start saying, geez, I don't know, maybe I kind of got a little carried away just because Price is Right was canceled and I really liked that show, but I don't know, man. I heard maybe it wasn't a suicide after all. And then the Oklahoma City bombing. And then after the Oklahoma City bombing happened, anyone who said anything about Waco, there was only one answer. Oh, yeah? Well, what about the Oklahoma City bombing? Right? Like it was Branch Davidians who had gone forward in time and blown up the Oklahoma City building, thereby justifying what the ATF and FBI had done to them. Pardon? What about Oklahoma? Well, you want to get into it. Yeah, that was a bunch of cops, too. But anyway, the American people in super majorities from San Diego to Bangor, Maine said, yeah, kill them! Burn them! Kill them! And when the pollsters called and said, do you approve of using tanks and the burning down of this house full of women and children? They said, yeah, I approve. Kill them more. Burn them hotter. The American people cried in unison because they are a bunch of savage barbarians with tiny little childlike brains that the cops, the government, they can just slip their phallus right up your brain ass and you'll believe whatever they tell you. Oh, I hate this family. I hate this voluntary association of people because they defended themselves when the cops raided their property and opened fire on them. How dare they defend themselves? What do you mean four unarmed people were killed by the cops that day? Including David Koresh's father-in-law, including, I'm sorry, I always forget the guy's name. I used to remember his name. The guy's sitting on his bed eating a bowl of cornflakes and a Huey helicopter flies by and a guy with an M16 waxes him. Like it's the Vietnam War. Oh, they didn't have the right to defend themselves from that, did they, Americans? And so now, guess what? You will all die in a ditch like a Branch Davidian too. Now you have to look over your shoulder and wonder whether the next cop you meet is going to shoot you in the head because he knows he can. Because you were cool with it then. The American people rallied behind the butchers of Waco. And Bill Clinton opened up every military base in America. Hey, local sheriff's deputies, come on in and get military training, special forces style training for dealing with your average everyday American who happens to have a warrant out. And there's a great clip in this same movie. Jeez, I should have my Waco clips better queued up for you guys, man. I have a clip here somewhere where the guy says, the days of warrants being served, the days of warrants of any kind being served in America are over. And why? Because of Waco. That's the excuse. And in fact, here, I'll just go ahead and try to queue it up if I can ever get freaking iTunes to open. Yeah, I hit the button on you, man. You're supposed to open after that. Thank you. All right, then I hit Waco, type in Waco there. Of course, I can't even spell that right. So, hell, I don't even have the clip for some reason. File, add folder to library. Oh, man. You're not supposed to do this live on the show, Horton. Well, I don't know, man. I'm trying. Waco. Yeah, just Waco. And then select folder there. And then see if I can get this clip for you that I'm looking for here. Oh, well, I guess not. Anyway, he says, hey, the days of a couple of cops in a couple of detectives in three-piece suits walking up to a door and knocking on it to serve a search warrant of any kind is over. Because we stand between the David Koreshes of the world and everybody here, right? The legislators. And so that's it. They don't need warrants anymore. Oh, well, I guess I'm not going to find this clip for you. I thought I was, but I'm not. And that's it, right? Because now every criminal is a Hitler. Every criminal is a Charles Manson. Every criminal is just as dangerous as they pretended David Koresh was. Everyone with a warrant out must be attacked with overwhelming force by paramilitary death squads with armored vehicles because David Koresh, right? They didn't have Al-Qaeda yet. Actually, they did, but they didn't realize it. The first World Trade Center was bombed just 2 days before the raid on the Davidians 2 days later. But yeah, man. It's an America full of David Koreshes out there, and that's why every deputy sheriff needs a machine gun and a black mask and a military helmet and more body armor than the Marines wear into battle. And so, if there was such a thing as a collective punishment, Americans deserve this. I know you don't, and I don't. But the vast majority of Americans cheer for mass murder as long as it's in an Arab country. Or a South American one. And they cheer for mass murder at the hands of their own local security forces as long as it's their next door neighbor, not them. So, I really don't have that much sympathy. Generally speaking. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right, you guys, welcome back. All right, well, Coburn can't do it. Ain't nobody can do the goddamn show today, man. I don't care. So, left to my own devices, I revert to rote. Waco. Nah, I'm over it. Just, if you haven't seen it, please do watch Waco, The Rules of Engagement, man. Would you? I remember I first saw that at Adobe Mall when it first came out. Unreal, man. There's so many outrages in that damn thing. And there's a sequel, too. It's called Waco, Waco, A New Revelation. And it has higher quality footage of the same massacre. Something else, man. All right. So, yeah, I need to talk about France, right? Let's talk about France. I'm sorry I couldn't get Eric Margolyes on. I really want to get Eric Margolyes on. He's conservative. He's a U.S. Army veteran, for all that's worth. He's an Ike Eisenhower-type Republican, he says. He's a war correspondent, and he loves the French, and he loves the Muslims. All of them. Loves them. And he wrote a pretty insightful article, and unfortunately, Eric's a bit under the weather. I can't have him on today. But maybe tomorrow or the next day, I'll get Eric Margolyes on the show for you to talk about all this. You know, his article starts with, yeah, about a year ago, I went and visited the Charlie Hebdo guys at their offices. Because, of course he did. He's Eric Margolyes, man. I'm telling you. Anyway, so we'll get to that. I started off my little rant there, the France thing, about the targeted versus mass surveillance. Now, so here's my next angle on that. I've been warning for years. It's just this absolutely mad policy, driven by Israeli and Saudi interests mostly, that has America seeking regime change in Syria for the last 3 years. And, you know, I don't know, man. It's kind of hard for me because I grew up thinking, oh, the conspiracy that knows what it's doing controls everything. And then now more and more, I think, no, Susan Rice controls everything. And she's as dumb as Condoleezza Rice. And she's as dumb as all the rest of them, too. They're just complete idiots up there deciding these things. And so, you know, when Obama was calling ISIS junior varsity on this show, we were talking with Patrick Coburn about it. And we're quite alarmed, right? 1 year ago. And before that, too. This is a big deal, if only because we're putting two and two together. Nobody rules eastern Syria or western Iraq. These guys call their group the Islamic State. They obviously are trying to turn their group into a state. That's what they want. They did it before. They tried it before in 2006 and too soon. And it blew up in their face, thank goodness then. The local Iraqis wouldn't have it. But, you know, it's pretty clear that there's no one around to stop them at this point. So it's pretty easy to just, you know, you're standing on top of the slippery slope. Look with your eyes, dumbass. And then, but what do we have? We have the president going, ISIS, they're not really that big of a deal. They're more like junior varsity compared to Al-Qaeda. Well, really? I thought he was the same guy who said that Al-Qaeda had just about been droned off the face of the earth. Now, not so much. And there's one main reason why, and he really did, you know, have a great many Al-Qaeda guys were killed with the drone war in Pakistan. But he created that many more with his drone war in Yemen. And then where that is totally just ridiculously, admittedly, by them, counterproductive. Leon Panetta himself says, yes, it's true we make more terrorists. I concede we make more terrorists every time we do a drone strike in Yemen. But hey, these are the tools we have. So we're going to keep doing what we're doing anyway, even though, yes, I admit to you that it's counterproductive. Uh-huh. All right. Well, at least that makes a quarter of a bit of sense that they're attacking enemies who might want to attack us. Okay. They're not doing it well, but on its face, that's plausible. But then the wars in Libya and Syria. I've been saying on this show, and I've been asking my guests on this show, and I've been complaining about it on this show, and Phil Giraldi's been saying, calm down, Scott Horton, it ain't that bad. And he's a CIA guy. You'd expect him to be more alarmist than me for years now on this show. But I'm saying, how many Europeans are going to fight, especially in Syria, once the thing in Syria started getting going and all the jihadis and guns started leaving from Libya straight to go and take the war to Syria as well, back in 2011. How many Europeans are going there to fight, and how many of them are going to be headed back to Europe? And then it's only a question of whether they've been fighting with al-Nusra or fighting with ISIS. Because if they've been fighting with al-Nusra, then that means they're loyal to Zawahiri and they're to my mind, just as likely as not to attack Western targets. Now, you know, others have talked about, and including on this show, how I think, was it Prothero on the show who said? It might have been Reese Ehrlich who said, like, he met al-Nusra guys or was in the room with them, and they just wouldn't even look at him or acknowledge him, and then they left. Al-Nusra, that's al-Qaeda in Syria. And they're under explicit instructions, don't mess with the Americans at all. We're fighting our own local thing here now. Even though they're still loyal to Zawahiri, they don't have that far enemy approach to their strategy at this point. But anyway, then again, they say that one or both of these attackers in France, or the major attackers in France, had been to Syria. I don't know exactly who he's fighting for. But anyway, the point is, it's just a matter of time, and it's a matter of numbers, and I've been warning you for years, and I've been exclaiming about how just absolutely insane and counterproductive and, in fact, treasonous this policy is of supporting the rebellion in Syria, because, in effect, you're just fighting the war for al-Qaeda in Iraq. That's who this group was then. Now it's al-Nusra, and then ISIS has split off from Nusra, but still. What do you think is going to happen? And that's, you know, taking out any suspicions of who all knew what, when, and why, and where, and what. And I don't know if, I don't have any reason to believe these guys other than what they say somewhat confirms my bias. I mean, I guess I was a little more surprised to hear him saying the Yemen thing. But Jeremy Scahill said he has contacts, al-Qaeda contacts in Yemen, who released their statement to him and said, yeah, you know, it was us all right. So I don't know. That's pretty severe confirmation, I guess. Nancy Youssef, who I have great respect for as a reporter, she reported multiple intelligence sources in America and I believe in Europe confirming to her that they knew that he'd been to Yemen. They knew already he'd been to Yemen. So anyway, Coburn's new one today is don't blame the, you know, police failures to stop these guys. I hope he mentions in there, yeah, and don't blame Islam. Blame, and this is the title, it's blowback. Don't blame these atrocities on security failures. The causes of last week's carnage are political. Blowback from years of wars in the Middle East. And just think about that. Where George Bush accidentally created a basically bin Ladenite jihadistan to include virtually all of the Anbar province and the land up to Mosul, and including Tikrit and Bakuba and a lot of other cities out there where, you know, jihadis had free reign for now 12 years straight. He did it because he was stupid and wrong and couldn't have imagined that that would be the result of his policy. Just as well he didn't imagine that he was fighting for Iran all along. To give them the capital city, to give them, you know, the biggest third of the country or the biggest, half of it, and leaving the Sunnis with a rump state. But Obama outright backed the rebellion in Libya and outright, and it could have been worse. Yes, he could have backed them more, but still, he has been intervening, not just with training and with money and with weapons, but also in giving a free hand to all our allies, the Saudis, the Qataris, and the Turks, to back the Sunni-based insurgency in Syria. And he's intervened politically on the so-called international institution level to prevent peace from being negotiated between anybody who's fighting. They say there are all these moderates. Well, how come they haven't been working on getting the moderates to strike a deal with the government so they can work together against ISIS and Nusra? Even yesterday, John McCain is on TV on the Sunday show saying we got to train up the Free Syrian Army. We have to arm the Free Syrian Army. When the biggest enemy of ISIS and Nusra is in Syria is the Assad government. The Free Syrian Army are not their enemies at all. They fight side by side all the time and trade, you know, personnel back and forth even. It's madness, this policy, and it's going to continue, resulting in these kinds of consequences. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, so the CENTCOM Twitter account has been hacked by the Islamic State. Seriously, go to Twitter, or somebody pretending to be them, twitter.com/CENTCOM. Go there right now before they unhack it. It says Pentagon Networks hacked Korean scenarios. I don't know if these are legitimate. They're claiming to have, files out of the Pentagon. It looks like their Twitter's been hacked. I don't know if any part of the Pentagon's actually been hacked. Here's some China scenarios. And it says, in the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful, the cyber caliphate continues its cyber jihad. You know what? I'm starting to suspect that somebody at the Pentagon is behind this hack of themselves. But then American soldiers, we're coming. Watch your back. We know everything about you, your wives and your children. And I guess here they have, employment documents. They don't have crap, dude. It's kind of silly, I think. But, anyway, so there you go. Ain't that funny? Twitter.com/CENTCOM. Again, as far as I know, that's all that's been hacked. Not the actual Pentagon, but Tampa, Florida, maybe that would be, for CENTCOM, but I don't know. Anyway, all right. So now, the next thing I want to say is, this is just kind of funny, but it leads to something more important, I think, maybe. Did you see the pictures of all the world leaders who came to be in the Paris march with the solidarity for free speech and all of that? And there was Merkel and Netanyahu and Mahmoud Abbas and all kinds of potentates from across the Muslim world in places where there's not a free speech to be found. There was a guy on Twitter yesterday who wrote up a thing. Where the hell is this? I already skipped it, maybe. Daniel Wickham. This is in Justin Raimondo's column today. It was on Twitter yesterday. Daniel Wickham, at the London School of Economics, compiled a list of all the enemies of free speech who elbowed their way to the head of the march. And he goes down and he shows you got the Prime Minister of Turkey, the King of Jordan, Netanyahu, some punk from Egypt's government, from Russia, from Algeria, UAE, Tunisia. And he goes through and he lists which of these potentates murder journalists or which of them just lock them in jail. Which of them prosecute their sources, etc. And anyway, and it goes on and on and on, the completely ridiculous hypocrisy of the people taking over this thing. But then the joke is they weren't even part of the march at all. That's why the low angle on all the pictures you saw is because all they did was they lined up all the world leaders arm in arm, and then they lined up their own, security detail and smitherses and coattail holders and whatever in the back, their little secretaries and stuff, to make it look like a deep crowd. And then on a low angle, they took this picture and made it look like any of these people were the head of any kind of march in France, when in fact they weren't. That was it. It was just a photo op, just a PR stunt where they sat there and pretended to be at the head of the march. Now, I didn't do a review with TV last night. Someone called Peter Hart over at Fair and see what they showed of that on the Lair News Hour on ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, on the cable news shows. I know all over Twitter, all these people retweeting the pictures of all the world leaders. Oh, look at all the world leaders standing for free speech. Well, first of all, they're all a bunch of free speech hating tyrants. And second of all, they only showed up for a photo op. They weren't part of any kind of march at all. The whole thing's ridiculous. But that gets us back to the real point, which is that this isn't about free speech. I mean, it sort of kind of is a little bit. they pick their target based on, gee, you know who I'd really like to shoot? Right? Okay. I'm with you that far. I'm not denying that it has anything at all to do with the cartoons of the Prophet, obviously. But it's so beside the point, really. It's one of those things where you're missing the forest for the trees. Well, look at the target. That's all you need to know about the motive, is what the target was. Really? So then, the target of the World Trade Center was capitalism? Not the American state? Not the empire? Not American power? But insurance companies and stuff like that? Is that... No. Right. You do need to know more than just what the target was to know what's going on here. And again, I admit, I don't have any proof of this. I do have a couple of journalists who I put a lot of stock in from my own experience, those being Nancy Youssef and Jeremy Scahill. But it's far from definite to me, and I don't really know other than it confirms my biases because it's exactly what I've been warning against all this time. Seems to be coming true here. It looks like an Al-Qaeda attack. And what do we know about Al-Qaeda? Nothing? They're trying to get a reaction out of you. They picked this target to get the best reaction, the best bang for their buck. What can we do that'll really piss them off? And so they picked their target that way. People think of it like, well, if they're not thinking about it, they go, oh, well, they attack cartoonists who were defaming the Prophet. Well, pretty simple, open and shut case for what's going on here. But there is more to it than that. There's a war on. And I think it's pretty clear that what they're trying to do is get the West to intervene further in the Middle East. And really, it's a both. It's an either way or both. It sounds contradictory until you just talk it through one time. It's the same thing for September 11th. It's the same thing for the coal and the embassies and the Khobar Towers and the First World Trade Center bombing, too. Option one. Ask yourself, why would Arabs want to blow up our stuff? And then find an answer to that. Oh, our government's been doing immoral things to them. And they're angry about it. Maybe we should have our government stop doing terrible things. And then we can all go about our day. That's option one. Option two is, go ahead and get mad. Go ahead, you big dumb bull, and charge at the red cape. And actually, I'm sorry to mix my metaphors, but it's more like the Sioux herding the bison off a cliff. And so, that's why Osama bin Laden's son told Rolling Stone in the summer of 2010 at a cafe, at a bar, a nightclub in Damascus, Syria, the last place in the Middle East, last Arab state where you can get a drink, you know, until the Americans are done with them. But anyway, in 2010, he talked about he was in Afghanistan in the year 2000, with his father, Osama bin Laden, living up there at the lion's den near the Durian Line, their campsite up in the mountains there, and how his father was rooting for Bush. Like, you could provoke Gore, fine, but Bush is just the right kind of pretend macho tough guy, cheerleader. Cheerleader, pretend tough guy who can't wait to get other people in a fight, and he'll be the most easy to provoke. And so when the Supreme Court gave it to Bush over Gore in the winter of 2000, Osama bin Laden celebrated because he wasn't counting on option one, that people are going to say, geez, they must really be angry about our foreign policy. Let's knock it off. That's not going to happen. They're going to get angry. They're going to double down. So Osama's, you know, method was, let's get them to triple down. Let's get them to quadruple down. Let's do anything we can to get them to invade full strength until their economy is broken. And yeah, that goes for France, who opposed the Iraq war back then under Jacques Chirac, but who supported the rest of it and who are, for intents and purposes, for the most part, America's sock puppets. And, of course, fought the war for, like America, fought the war for Al-Qaeda and its affiliates in Libya in 2011, but fought against them in Mali in 2012 and 13. And, And what they want is for us to overdo it until the empire can finally be forced out for good. That's the Al-Qaeda strategy. It has been. Paris is the far enemy, just the same as New York and D.C. Get it?
Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org.
Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.
Yeah, so that's the thing of it. J.M. Berger is right. Everyone's saying, blah, blah, just a Twitter account hacked. Should maybe have a look at the content. I guess the content I saw, I didn't have a chance to really look at. I'm live on the air. I didn't really have a chance to look at it. The account is now suspended. Took Twitter a little while to get to it. But yeah, they did have at... It's still there, I think. Well, here, let me reopen closed tab here a little bit. Until I get to it. I closed a few. But, it's there. They, God dang. It was the first tab I closed, I guess. Out of a lot. Out of many. Here it is. It's at pastebin.com/. Does it matter? Capitals? It shouldn't, right? Capital Y, 2, lowercase, SP, capital P, 7, Y, lowercase, 9. There it is. And right there, then they say, here's part of confidential data, and it's some army files and some war scenarios and then some more things. The headline on Fox, I thought it was, or one of the headlines on Twitter or something, was that it was personal information about generals. So I don't know how personal it got. The reason I sounded kind of dismissive is because what I clicked on just had some email addresses, and it didn't look like much. I didn't see anything about wives or kids or any of that. So... I don't know. But anyways, so there goes that. That'll be the biggest news story of the day today. Although, for what, so they can pass the new CISPA? Somebody just, that's one of my headlines here. Somewhere. Oh, that's my Afghanistan section. I swear I had it. Some senator saying we had to pass the new CISPA because of North Korea. Sorry, I lost the link. Anyway, so here's the other thing I have to say about the Paris thing, and then I'll try to just blow through some news here as fast as I can, if I can. But all of the kind of right-wing talk, mostly right-wing talk, which, you know, the liberals play into it, and see the great article by Stephen Zhao on antiwar.com today about the left's ignorant Islam critics. It's a really good article. That's why it's the spotlight today. But all this talk mostly from the right that, yeah, see, every time a Muslim does something, that proves Muslims are bad. That proves that Islam is evil. And the more radically you believe in it, the more horrible of a person you are and the more likely you are to do a horrible thing to someone. And it's just not true. It's just ridiculously false, in fact. And the thing of it is, not only is it outright horrible for all of the people who are not your enemy, who you are claiming are your enemy and are therefore mostly promoting the sacrifice of their rights and even their lives based on ill-informed kind of fears and accusations. But the thing is that is all the perfect PR for your enemy. So, in other words, right-wing conservative father, brother-in-law of the listener of this show who this is being played for now. If you really are against Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State and you want the worst for them and victory for our side here, the worst thing in the world that you can do is insist that they represent all of Islam. Because it's not that other Muslims who don't buy into their stuff are going to really start buying into their stuff because you convince them that it really is Islam, but they will see that as a representation of what the American side thinks. The Americans say it's all us Muslims, all us Arabs who are their enemy. So hell, maybe we should join up. As long as Al-Qaeda and ISIS and these others, maybe Hezbollah, are the ones who are willing to stand up to this foreign influence. And so, the effect of that, the effect of you believing this lie and endlessly repeating it and giving aid and comfort to politicians who would carry out policies against many Muslims far and wide who have absolutely nothing to do with these attacks, serves the purpose of your enemies. Do you want every Sunni in Yemen to identify with Ayman al-Zawahiri and his goals, or do you not want that? And the truth of the matter is that hardly anybody believes in this kind of bin Ladenite, Salafist, intolerant, radical right-wing, not conservative, but radical kind of right-wing ideology. It has virtually no play in France whatsoever. The French Muslims are Muslim in name only, like most Americans are Christian in name only, or most Jews are Jewish in name only. They don't even really believe in the religion. That's something their parents and their grandparents believe in. They're modern 21st century people, man. What do they have to identify with, a brand of Islamic extremism that would insist everybody live like the 7th century or whatever? The only thing that makes them identify with bin Ladenite types, Zarqawiite types, even worse, if you could believe that, is who they're fighting. Whose side they're on, and who's doing the dying. And it's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Here we are, after 14 years of war, 13 and a half, whatever, something changed, years of terror war. People can't see, they can't even just think back and see, well, wait a minute. At the time of September 11th, Al-Qaeda was 200 or 300 guys, and the CIA with their laser pointers, and the Air Force with their daisy cutters, killed almost all of them. Almost all of them. A couple of dozen escaped with bin Laden to Pakistan. Maybe a few dozen. Less than 100, for sure. I've seen estimates as high as 80. Escaped, somehow, escaped to Pakistan, to safety. And then that was it. There was no bin Ladenite movement across the Middle East. There was virtually no sympathy, especially after such a massive attack on so many civilians, 3,000 civilians killed at once like that, all over the world, just, from positions of power down to the neighborhood level. It delegitimized their movement until George Bush, with the American majority behind him, decided to take the tactic of, oh, you think we're mean, huh? Oh, you think we're an empire, huh? Well, now we're going to come and torture you. Now we're going to come and we're going to have an extra war, a bonus war against an unrelated target just because we can, because we like to, because we have corrupt interests in mind and the Americans still have the taste of blood on their tongue and they're not done yet. Afghanistan was too remote for an effective demonstration, but don't worry. We'll deal with the Al-Qaeda remnants in Pakistan soon enough. First, we have to create an entire new jihadistan in western Iraq and spread this entire war on for the decades to come. And then, hell, when the Al-Qaeda guys can't get it done, America jumps in on their side, like in Libya and Syria, to help further them along. So we have a worse enemy to fight in just a couple more years now.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, you guys. Oh, look at the time. Let me tell you here, Egypt to wipe out entire city of Rafah for border buffer zone. Thousands of families to be expelled for demolition. Jesus. Palestinian Authority blocks Gaza reconstruction and demands control. All right, so I'll have to read up on that. Sorry, the PA versus Hamas thing. But, yeah, Rafah. Now, we've known about this for a while. They've been demolishing homes near the Rafah border crossing. And please don't anyone get me wrong that that there's anything tolerable about being a prisoner in Gaza. But if there's anything that could make it any degree of tolerable at all, it was that they still had some black market trade through Egypt under the tunnels into the town of Rafah. But now they're going to create such a buffer zone as to, apparently, they're trying to make that impossible, to shut down any black market trade through those tunnels. And that's just a horror show, man. You know, anybody out there who's been feeling real good about not being on the side of the evil Muslim jihadist attackers who murdered the cartoonists in France, and yeah, we're the good guys compared to those evil bad guys and whatever. Yeah, well, it's your sock puppet fascist military dictatorship in Egypt that's doing this to the prisoners in Gaza. That's the Charlie Hebdo massacre times a thousand. That's Charlie Hebdo every day. That's a Waco level massacre level crisis every day for the people of Gaza, freezing and starving in their concentration camp. As America and Israel sock puppet military fascist coup d'etat dictatorship in Egypt enforces Israel's will there. Yeah, well, we wanted to keep them hungry but not starving, but we decided, nah, let's go ahead and starve them. But, yeah, at least we believe in free speech, right? You have the freedom, Gazans, to cry, but we can't hear you, so. All right, and then war is not over. Oh, you didn't think the war was over just because somebody said that. Did Rachel Maddow do a big special about leaving Afghanistan forever a couple of weeks ago or not? War is not over. U.S. Marines return to Afghanistan. It's January the 8th, 2015 is the dateline on this. January the 8th. A week and a day. A week and a day after the deadline for the end of the war. And here comes the U.S. Marine Corps coming back to Afghanistan. Well, you see, they didn't win the war. And they're afraid that if they actually pull all their troops and money out, well, even just their troops, that money won't be enough to hold up the Kabul government. And in fact, just the other day, the new president there offered a bunch, it was revealed at least, that he had offered a bunch of posts to the Taliban and they rejected them. I guess they would rather bide their not very much time that they need to really come in and rule the place. Here, Joint Chiefs Chairman rejects Obama's assessment of Afghan war success. Dempsey comes out, says, I don't see how Obama can say the terror war won't emerge from Afghanistan. He openly disavowed, writes Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com, openly disavowed President Obama's recent speech claiming mission accomplished in Afghanistan, saying he didn't see how Obama could say Afghanistan would never be a terrorist safe haven again. Dempsey said he sees pockets inside. You know how it could have if George Bush had just made a deal with the Taliban? We won't kill you. If you hand us over all the Arabs, all the friends of Osama, and as long as you don't ever do anything like host these kinds of guys again. That was the deal they were offering. We'll gladly give you Osama and his friends and never do anything so stupid as to offer somebody like him sanctuary here again. But that wasn't good enough. We had to go bounce some rubble. Had to go carpet bomb the town of Bedrock for nothing, so that people would be more likely to vote Republican next time. And, you know, they could empty their bomb inventories and buy some more. And lots of different motives going on there, but you know how the game goes. So there you go. They'll be back to a full-scale occupation of Afghanistan in no time. It's the same thing with Libya. I still stand by my prediction, even though I know it's 4 years later now. But 4 years ago, when they launched the Libya war, and I warned you not to, I said America's going to end up owning Libya for a generation. We're going to have soldiers there training up an army and this and that and the other thing. At some point, it's going to grab the headlines. At some point, they're going to have to admit that Ansar al-Sharia and worse have free run of that place, and Jeb or Hillary is going to send in the infantry. And they're just going to keep playing the same game. There's no way around it. What are they going to do? They could have left Gaddafi in power, but nope, decided not to do that. And so I think that's going to be the future there soon enough. Same thing for Afghanistan. The conventional wisdom in D.C. is virtually unanimous. The lesson of the war with the Islamic State now is that we should have never left Iraq. The lesson is you can never leave anywhere where you ever are, or else something bad could happen. That's it. Everyone in Washington, D.C. agrees with that. So you're going to see the Afghan war, the Afghan occupation will still be going on. The Iraq occupation will still be going on, and different levels of intervention all across Africa will all still be going on. The Pacific pivot for the Navy and the Air Force will still be going on until the dollar breaks. There's just no way to make them stop, man. They're just not going to stop. And everywhere they go, they make things worse, and then they go, hey, look, a problem that now we got to solve. And never mind how it came to be this way. Same thing going on with Boko Haram right now. You know, the war in Libya, which immediately spilled over into Mali as Gaddafi's hired Tuareg mercenaries took all their guns and went home to northern Mali, where they said, hey, autonomy isn't good enough. We want full-scale independence from the south. And they went to war. But then on their heels came their jihadi enemies, who immediately marginalized them and took over their war of secession against the south. And only because they're such idiots that they marched on the south instead of just breaking off the north from it, they finally provoked the French into intervening and waging that full-scale war there. But while they were there, they met up with Boko Haram's guys. And, you know, I had thought, oh, yeah, you know. Oh, they were seen on the jungle gym together, you know, how the Al-Qaeda warriors just love them monkey bars. But no, it turned out there's actually really good journalism about how Boko Haram guys from Nigeria went up to Mali and they got weapons and they got training and they got talking points. And they were affected, apparently, to a great degree and in very negative ways by their association with the jihadists in Mali. Again, another consequence of the 2011 war in Libya. And so now Boko Haram has carved out their own little Islamic state. And, man, those guys are some butchers, too. And, you know, the original reports were hundreds, and then some politicians said 2,000, and all the headline writers liked 2,000. But even still, at least hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people have been massacred over the last week there in Nigeria. And they're just coming in and raising entire villages and killing everybody, like the U.S. and Vietnam kind of thing. According to the Telegraph, Boko Haram is now a mini Islamic state with its own territory. They control about 20,000 square miles of territory and are fast becoming a terrorist state. That may be a little bit hyperbolic, but not too much. So I guess Michael Shorter's prediction is going to prove right there in Nigeria as well, which I've been predicting since this show started. In 2007, war in Nigeria. I'm just too far ahead of the curve for anybody to remember how good I am at predicting stuff. Hey, all, Scott Horton here to let you know Pizza Noir, Book 1 by Denver Day, is now available at your local bookstore and Amazon.com. Grab a cold cup of coffee and follow Tacoma, Washington Detective Rick Thompson as he investigates the mystery behind the mass murder of dozens of hot young strippers and roller derby girls all across the West, while he learns new things about the world and himself. Pizza Noir, Book 1 by Denver Day. Normal, as we knew it, is a thing of the past. Find it at scotthorton.org/books or scotthorton.org/Amazon.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
All right, you guys. Well, unfortunately, I was not able to get Mitchell Prothero on the show for you today. He got stranded out in the middle of nowhere with very little cell phone reception, he said. So yeah, man. I'm going to try to get him on tomorrow, the next day. U.S. airstrike in Syria may have killed 50 civilians, says Roy Gutman and Musab al-Hamadi at McClatchy, D.C. A U.S.-led coalition airstrike killed at least 50 civilians late last month when it targeted a headquarters of Islamic State extremists in northern Syria, according to an eyewitness and a Syrian opposition human rights organization, which I take that to mean the observatory. No, it's the Syrian Network for Human Rights, it says. The civilians were being held in a makeshift jail. They bombed a jail. And anyway, I think, they kill civilians every day over there. But that's okay, because they're the Americans. They can do whatever they want, kill whoever they want. We're exceptional. That means deadly sins become virtues when committed by Americans, as long as it's against foreigners or by American government employees against civilians, in that case, too. Anyway, so they kill 50 people all the time. But interesting here that they didn't even admit that the attack happened until this long later, a week and a half, something later. And chances are good we're going to have Roy on the show tomorrow. I've been emailing with him this morning. He's flying around and unable to do the show today as well. But it says here 80 bodies were found after the strike, 25 of them were Islamic State fighters, the rest prisoners. More than half of those were believed to be civilians held for violations of Sharia. Oh, good. So they were in there for, well, I don't know, probably, or I guess not necessarily doing anything to anyone. The Al-Qaeda guys, they're a lot like Democrats and Republicans with their broken windows policing and all that kind of crap. We're trying to create a perfect society here. Fall in line or else. It's their shared philosophy with the Americans. All right. And now this very important one by Mitchell Prothero. In heaviest fighting since August, Kurds turn back Islamic State assault near Erbil, but not by much. It's Gwer, G-W-E-R, Gwer, Iraq. This is the town about 30 miles outside of Erbil. I forgot how, I think it's right around halfway to Mosul, but I might be wrong about that. Maybe it's a third of the way or a quarter of the way to Mosul or something like that. I don't have a map in front of me. But anyway, and I might be thinking of a different town where different battles had happened in the past. But anyway, so they crossed the river. The Islamic State fighters crossed the river in 21 small boats and came over and attacked the Kurdish Peshmerga forces. And they were driven back, apparently, and their boats destroyed by American air power. But the Kurds have been reinforced with American, German, and Russian equipment here. And so they were able to drive the Islamic State fighters back. But the article ends with, I'll just read it for you here. When asked if the Peshmerga had enough manpower and equipment, one chubby fighter laughed. "I'm a civil servant and studying for my PhD in the United Kingdom," he laughed. "If we had what we needed, do you think I would be out here? Look at me," he added, pointing to his ample girth. "I'm not a soldier. I don't even know the names of half these weapons. I can only use this," he says, pointing to his Kalashnikov assault rifle. If we had enough men and equipment, I could go home. But this is my country, and I will fight for it because there's nobody else to do it. That's who's protecting Kurdistan from the Islamic State right now. American planes and ragtag volunteer Peshmerga. The vaunted Peshmerga. So I guess that'll be a big part of our conversation with Mitchell Prothero, is just how good or bad or weak or strong of a paper tiger these guys are. And wasn't it just his last article? I think it was his last article. No, it was Reese Erlich. It was Reese Erlich, wasn't it, who was talking with the Kurds at a base just outside of Mosul, saying, oh, yeah, we're going to march on Mosul. We're going to drive them Islamic State fighters out of there. Yeah, we got 6,000 men. And then, yeah, but they look around, and there's a couple of hundred guys. So here's a couple hundred of them. But, yeah, no, but we got 6,000 of them, though. And, yeah, you know what, though? Give us more money and more guns. Yeah, I swear, we're going to march on Mosul any day now. Boy, is this going to be a long war. If this is the quality of the allies on our side. Eric Margulies says, yeah, white officers with, typical British, French, colonial style white officers with brown enlisted men. But I don't even know how workable that is in this. Plenty of opportunity for blowback. Very little opportunity for victory here, guys. And then look at this, man. These freaking guys. Dempsey. The guy that stopped the war against Syria back in 2013. Give him credit. Dempsey says Iran's role in Iraq might be positive. General Martin Dempsey, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, the same one who was just saying, we didn't win the Afghan war. I don't know how in the world Obama can say terrorists aren't ever coming back there. Of course they are. Same guy. He says, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff says on January 8th, Iran's influence in Iraq could be positive. Dempsey, who spoke with reporters following a meeting at the Pentagon with Lieutenant General Benjamin Gatz, chief of the General Staff of the Israeli Defense Forces, said, quote, If it is a path that ties the two countries, Iran and Iraq, more closely together economically or even politically, as long as the Iraqi government remains committed to inclusivity of all the various groups inside the country, then I think Iranian influence will be positive. But what really matters is where it all goes, and we're watching it. So, nice talking, but anyway, what he's trying to say is, good. The Iraqi government, such as it is, the Dawah Party Supreme Islamic Council government, needs Iran. And so if killing Islamic State guys is the higher priority, then, yeah, okay, I guess that makes sense on the surface. But, of course, this is what drove the tribes into Al-Qaeda, into an alliance with these Al-Qaeda types, the Islamic State, in the first place. Well, Al-Qaeda in the first place and the Islamic State, sort of kind of same thing in the second, is the fact that ever since 2003, America's been fighting for Iran in Iraq, strengthening their position, strengthening the position of their auxiliaries to the degree that they accomplished Iran's goal, which was to break up Iraq. Just like that was Israel's goal, that was Iran's goal as well. They wanted a majority Shiite government. They wanted the American Army and Marines to help the Badr Brigade and the Mahdi Army kick all the Sunnis out of Baghdad for them. And then they wanted to run away with Shiistan and let the Sunnis rot in the desert sun. With, as Tony Camerino, a.k.a. Matthew Alexander, was explaining on the show the other day, as Juan Cole explained on the show 10 years ago, because the Sunnis ain't got no oil. They got very little oil there in Sunnistan there in the middle. It's almost all down near Basra and up near Kirkuk. And so they're kind of screwed if they don't control the national government in Baghdad in the center. They're screwed because America fought Iran's battle. And all you got to do is go back and look at Muqtada al-Sadr in 2003, in 2004, in 2005, in 2006, and even when he was guilty as hell, just like them, still contradicting them all along, opposing Iranian influence in Iraq and opposing American influence in Iraq for its own sake, and also because the Americans were abetting the pro-Iran factions. And he wasn't just complaining that, well, you're supporting them, not me. He was complaining that the Iran factions want to break up the country. They want this strong federalism where the Sunnis are left to fend for themselves and the Shia run away with the capital city. And Sauter was saying, no, no, no. So you don't have to find American analysts. You can ask Sauter. Read the book on him that Coburn wrote. He wanted to hold the country together in an Arab-Iraqi-Kurdish national alliance, a government of national salvation against Iran and America. So, no, Iran is playing the most destructive role in Iraq as it could possibly play, which is, of course, second place to America's since 2003. All along. Horror. Murdering people with power drills to the skull. And creating the circumstances that led to the rise of the Islamic State in the first place. And now this is who you want to run with. Again. Still. These are the people in charge. They're no better than the Bushies when it comes to figuring out what the hell they're doing over there.